It is.
Good morning, everyone. We're going to get started with the Senate Committee on Judiciary. Thank you for being here on President's Day. We have one bill for public hearing, possible work session, House Bill 4082. Now, Rep. Taylor, I know that you wanted to come up with Aaron and with Jeff Rhodes. Did you want to be panel one or panel two?
Chair Pazansky, I actually was wondering if Senator Knope and Representative Stark, and I understand Representative Huffman's on his way. He'll probably walk in.
Okay. And start. So we'll you'll do panel two, and we'll have the other electeds do panel one?
No. We'll come, all the electeds, if it's okay with you, we'll just come first.
And okay. That would be great. Why don't you all three come up? Because, yeah, we just had you down here. It looked like your name had been moved into another panel. We can handle that. We can handle this.
Okay. Chair Pazansky, members of the committee, thank you for having us here today. I'm Kathleen Taylor, State Representative, House District 41. Thank you for coming to hear our one bill. I'm here in order to request your support for House Bill 4082, which expands ORS 167.012, the Promoting Prostitution Statute. As
Come
many
on.
Of you are
we have
aware,
a hot seat for you.
We're
waiting for you.
Okay.
Get it warmed up.
As many of you are aware, Representative Huffman and I co-chair the Commercial Sexual Exploitation of Children Workgroup. This workgroup meets regularly with stakeholders to address the needs of sex trafficking victims, many of whom are minors. This concept was introduced to the workgroup by the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office as a way to ensure the Oregon law aligns with how the crime of promoting prostitution looks on the ground. As with other forms of criminal activity, individuals engaged in the activity are sometimes, quote-unquote, making exchanges with things other than money or property. In order to reflect that reality, this bill adds the receipt of or the agreement to receive, quote, goods, services, or something else of value, end quote, to the Promoting Prostitution Statute. The rest of the Promoting Prostitution Statute remains unchanged, including that individuals charged with a crime must have the criminal intent to promote prostitution. Representative Huffman and I worked closely with the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office, the Attorney General's Office, as well as the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyer Association. Additionally, advocates have submitted written testimony in support of the bill. I appreciate all the stakeholders for their input and support, and to our Senate co-chief sponsors, Senator Gelser and Senator Knope, and Representative Stark as well, for helping to champion this bill. I will now defer to my colleagues, and then, as Chair Pazansky mentioned, we will also have the Attorney General's Office and Jeff Rhodes from Multnomah County District Attorney's Office to answer the question. You should have on OLIS a letter from the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. That's on OLIS. Unfortunately, Gail Myers could not be here today. House Bill 4082 passed unanimously out of the House Committee on Judiciary as well as unanimously off the House floor. Thank you, Chair Pazansky, and the members of hearing this bill, and we urge your aye vote. I will guess turn it over maybe to Representative Huffman.
Chair Pazansky, committee members, it's such a thrill to be with you this morning, albeit late. Apologies for that. Like Rep. Taylor said, this is another great product of our CSEC and trafficking permanent committee that meets all the time. I was really hopeful that Anita Bells could be here this morning. She is out of Central Oregon and also works with our committee and just finished wrapping up. Every year she goes to the Super Bowl city and works with a large group of law enforcement and everybody to try to keep trafficking at a minimum as much as they possibly can, and her stories are extremely eye-opening about the work that goes on in Super Bowl cities every year. It's mind-numbing to hear, and so that's part of a big reason and the trafficking that goes on in Oregon on a daily basis. I continue to get members from all over the state walk up to me and say, do we really have a problem with this in Oregon? We really do. And fortunately, we've got a good group of folks, including Aaron Knott from the Attorney General's office and many others that recognize the need. Multnomah County DA's office is very active, and they see and understand the need. Rather exciting coming up, just a preview of the 2017 session and what we're going to have. Aaron and Justice Brewer and Judge Waller actually went back east for a conference and came back with some some great ideas for concepts that we're going to be working on in the interim and bring to you in 2017. So the work continues to try to do the best we can to eradicate trafficking in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I am Tim Knope, State Senator from Senate District 27, which includes Bend, Redmond, Tumalo, and Sun River. And I am with you today as a supporter of House Bill 4082, and I think it's really important that we pass the bill. If you are one who wants to close loopholes, this would be a good one to close. The issue really was brought to us by law enforcement and their observance of what's happening out there. And they are having a hard time prosecuting certain people who are essentially, we would probably in our vernacular, it'd be like giving in-kind support to the criminal intent of prostitution. And that is a key to this bill. You have to have criminal intent. And so those who are just out there who are trying to help people who are in prostitution would not be caught up in this. However, if you have criminal intent and you're in the business of making money off of these individuals, then in fact it would apply to you. So I think that's important to note. We've worked very hard as a legislature to try to end human trafficking, especially sex trafficking here in Oregon. And this gives us one more opportunity to do that. And so in a short session, I think this is a very doable bill. And considering that had no opposition in the House, we hope that we can get to that same status here in the Senate. So I would encourage your support from the committee. Thank you.
Thanks.
Good morning. My name is Dwayne Stark, State Representative, House District 4 in Southern Oregon. And I really, really wish we didn't need this bill. But unfortunately, we do, because criminals are very creative. And the law, we thought it was actually clear when we said that you couldn't trade goods or property, or sorry, money or property for trafficking a human. But apparently, we need to clarify it a little bit more to point out that you do not get to barter with human lives or for human lives. And that's what this bill is about, clarifying that in no circumstances are we saying it is okay to barter another person, whether it's money, whether it's goods, whether it's stuff, whether it's services, it's not okay. I'm a little disappointed that this is as far as we got this session. I'd like to see us moving a lot more in down the direction of protecting children, protecting women, protecting men, protecting human life, and valuing that. My wife and I have both worked with victims who have been trafficked, both adults and children, and it's a devastating thing. And I think this legislative body needs to be working actively to make sure, not just starting, that this is just a start, but we're working actively to make it more and more difficult for people to traffic other people. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for anyone on the panel? Thank you all very much for taking time out of your day to be with us. And we're going to go ahead and move into the next panel. And I think the next panel will include Aaron Knott and Jeff Rhodes.
Chair Brzezanski, members of the committee, my name is Aaron Knott. I'm the legislative director for the Attorney General in the Oregon Department of Justice here in support of House Bill 4082. So basically what this bill does is something we've already seen elsewhere in the criminal code. It started with the theft statute. There was a recognition that you can steal a lot more than money or even goods. You can steal things with intangible value. When you, say, go into a restaurant and do the figurative dine and dash, you're stealing the food, but you're also stealing the labor that was put together to assemble the food. And what we found in the theft arena is that there are actually many, many circumstances where you can steal a service or other items of value. To name a few, labor, professional services, transportation, communication services, entertainment, security, loaning out equipment but not actually stealing the equipment. If somebody comes in and uses it but they don't take it, that's another example of an intangible that's being stolen. So what this crime is, the promoting of prostitution, it occurs if a person with the intent to promote prostitution, that'll be important in a moment, knowingly receives or agrees to receive money or other property other than as a prostitute being compensated for personally rendered prostitution services pursuant to an agreement or an understanding that the money is derived from prostitution activity. It is, in brief, the statute that targets pimps, for lack of a better term, for that activity. This is the statutory mechanism we use to hold those individuals accountable. I was asked, as was legislative counsel, whether this bill and these modifications would have any potential to disrupt the provision of clinical services, health services, or any other type of service to individuals engaged in prostitution. I reviewed that question. Legislative counsel separately reviewed that question. We both drew the same conclusion. There is no way that this provision can be applied in that direction because any person providing clinical care, medical care, social services, anything of that sort, would lack the criminal intent to promote prostitution. That is simply not why those services are being provided. I've consulted with legislative counsel. They reach the exact same conclusion, and I think both of us are happy to answer any questions.
All right. Are there any questions? Gentlemen?
Mr. Chair, Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Rhodes. I'm the legislative liaison for the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office. I'm here on behalf of the Multnomah County DA's Office and the Oregon District Attorney's Association this morning in support of House Bill 4082. First, just want to thank our great list of sponsors, which is very long and very exciting. Very simply put, this bill updates 167.012 sub C in recognition that smart traffickers and exploiters are using this loophole. And I just, for the committee's information, these are among the smartest defendants, among the smartest folks that we see coming through the criminal justice system. They are master manipulators, and these are the folks that know how to exploit the loopholes in the law, and they've been doing just that in this provision. And so with that, we are here to answer any questions that the committee has.
All right. Still any questions? Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm going to call up Joel Shapiro, and it's Michelle. Last name, I can't read the last of it. Chala? Or
Chills.
Okay, I couldn't make that last one out.
It's German.
Okay, well, please come on up. I mean, did you want to come up with the other two ladies? Is that your preference? Joel, would you stand?
I'll let them go.
Okay, and then we'll let you finish up. Ladies, why don't you all come up? I didn't know you were going to be a panel.
Hi.
Hi, good morning. How are y'all doing?
Good morning.
Good. So if you'll just give us your name before your testimony, that would be wonderful.
Okay, great.
I'm Matilda Vickers.
Hi, my name is Caitlin Tracy.
And I'm Michelle Schultz.
Okay, who would like to go first?
I can go first.
Okay, that sounds great.
Professionally, I am a psychiatric mental health nurse. I work for the Oregon State Hospital. I'm currently...
Michelle, I'm going to ask you to move the microphone down a little bit because you're coming really low. Thank you.
I am a psychiatric mental health nurse at Oregon State Hospital, and I am in training to become a psychiatric nurse practitioner, and I have had clients who were victims of human trafficking. Most frequently, they were trafficked by their own families. My deepest concern about this law is that about the changes in this law is it is not evidence-based, and that the changes in the law will have unintended consequences, specifically disproportionately targeting sexual minorities, people of color, people of low socioeconomic status, and it will have the unintended consequence of further promoting trafficking instead of reducing trafficking. Because what happens when criminalization increases in municipalities, violence against sex workers increases, and the very people who would report trafficking, especially trafficking of minors, which nobody wants, feel afraid to report to law enforcement and social service agencies in order for those children who desperately need help to be rescued. I think we all agree that nobody wants children, nobody wants trafficking to occur, but the current anti-trafficking rhetoric, which has been my understanding, especially the commercial sexual exploitation of children, has been the main driver for this, which was my understanding. This is not going to work. It's not evidence-based. As far as the Super Bowl thing with sex workers, that's been debunked in multiple studies over the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. Back to disproportionate unintended consequences. This reminds me of when the city of Portland had its prostitution free zones that it had to rescind because they were accused of racial profiling. The people that most likely exchange sex for money or for goods and services other than money or drugs are people of low socioeconomic status, LGBTQI minors, trans women of color, and other people of color who have been involved in the sex trade. This will also promote increased harm against sex workers, violence, because in other municipalities where criminalization has increased, increased violence has followed, and increased rates of HIV prevalence, increased rates of STI prevalence, because sex workers who are trying to have a transaction with their clients will have become under a time crunch and are either forced or coerced into practicing risky sex without a condom. This has been shown in studies in Vancouver. This has been shown in studies in Brazil. This has been shown in studies in, especially in the former Eastern Bloc countries, in sub-Saharan Africa, Mexico. I could name multiple countries where this has occurred, where they have done this research over and over again. Already, black men are disproportionately arrested for crimes related to sex work. Black women are disproportionately incarcerated for engaging in sex work, and that will only continue to expand. If we are serious about getting rid of commercial sexual exploitation of children, my recommendation would be to fund a major study with an institution such as Portland State and do an evidence-based study of the number of minorities that are truly engaged in the sex trade, such as the big study in New York that was done with the Urban Institute. They interviewed approximately 400 minors involved in the sex trade and 85 pimps, and it turned out that only 10% of those minors had pimp involvement, and the majority of those minors were introduced to the trade by their friends. A lot of those kids who were involved in the sex trade had left their homes due to interpersonal violence, or they had been kicked out by their families because they were sexual minorities. That is my concern. If we are truly serious about getting rid of minors involved in the sex trade, we need to do serious, authentic, mm-hmm. evidence-based research, and we need to provide better services that are culturally competent and appropriate for minors, that are human rights-based, in accordance with the guidelines by the UNAIDS and the World Health Organization and other Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, and other organizations that work directly on this issue. As a mental health nurse, I have seen the consequences of this happening to people. They have PTSD, flashbacks from 20 years ago. I think that we can do a better job by our children, and this And as much as we want to do this, this is not the way to go about it. There are better ways that I think Oregon could be on the cutting edge of good research, mm-hmm. and we could completely change the anti-trafficking conversation. The mm-hmm. current rhetoric in anti-trafficking most often quotes studies that have been debunked by the General Accountability, the U.S. General Accountability Office, and Lancet, and other well-regarded in research institutions. I think we don't know. Nobody knows how many people have actually been trafficked because we haven't done research. The number that's often quoted is 300,000 children, and that research actually says 300,000 children are at risk of being trafficked, and they include children that live within driving range of the Mexican or the Canadian border. That is considered to be a risk for trafficking. So that level of data is what is underlying these mm-hmm. decisions. And I just think that we need to have legislation that is evidence-based. We need to be smarter about this. Mm-hmm. And I think that we're going to have unintended consequences, and we're going to have people disproportionately being arrested, filling our jails that are already overburdened, especially in rural counties, and clogging up our court systems that could be used for more serious crimes.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you. Who's going to go next?
My name's Caitlin. I am a domestic violence advocate. I've been working in social services for the past 7 years. I'm here because I have several concerns with Bill 4082, and I'm so grateful to be here today to express them to you, so thank you so much for your time and attention. My first concern is that a lot of the language that I've heard so far is that this bill is meant to battle the issue of trafficking, which is really concerning to me because the language of the bill does not say trafficking, it does say prostitution. So as much as I understand the intention of this bill is maybe to reduce the rate of trafficking, my concern is that it absolutely won't. In 2015, Amnesty International released their statement calling for the decriminalization of prostitution. One of the reasons why is that all of the research shows that anti-prostitution legislation does not reduce the rate of trafficking. And there are several reasons for that, one of which is that we're conflating people who are choosing sex work with folks who are being forced into sex work. Another thing is that folks will sometimes choose sex work because of circumstances. A lot of the people who are choosing sex work because of their circumstances are people who are in really vulnerable populations. So I'm here to share my perspective as somebody who has done social services for many years. Portland right now, just as an example, is experiencing a housing crisis. And the language of this bill talks about expanding the definition of prostitution to include the exchange of sex work for goods and services. I've worked with many domestic violence survivors that also engage with sex work by choice or by circumstance, who might choose to do sex work for a lot of exchange of goods and services, one of which could be housing. So what I see with this bill is that we are choosing to expand this definition so that maybe the person who is providing housing in exchange for sex work might be criminalized in that situation. And I'm certainly coming from the perspective that I would never want anyone to be in such a situation that they're so vulnerable in their situation without housing that actually their last resort is to choose to do sex work in exchange for a basic need. My concern with the bill, though, is that it doesn't address the lack of the basic need at all. Mm-hmm. Just last week, I spoke to Compassion First, which is an anti-trafficking organization just outside of Portland. About 6 months ago, when I talked to them, they were planning to open up shelter space at a safe shelter downtown in Portland. When I checked back with them last week to see if they had opened that shelter space, they told me they hadn't because they lost their funding. So my other concern is that in the state of Oregon, as we are planning to expand this definition of prostitution because we're so concerned with the rate of trafficking in the state of Oregon, anti-trafficking social services don't have enough funding to keep their shelter beds that they had 6 months ago, but then they lost. I think that if we would really want to see a reduced rate in trafficking in the state of Oregon, also in the city of Portland, what we need to do is provide better supportive services. And that can look a lot of different ways. Sometimes it's more surprising and not as obvious as we think. If we invest our time into housing services, into employment services, domestic violence services for people of all ages, especially youth, because youth have a high rate of engaging in survival sex work, but also don't trust law enforcement, by the way, because of prostitution laws. I think if we invest our time and our resources into social services, that will actually reduce the rate of trafficking in the state of Oregon. Expanding the definition of prostitution, once again, we're not talking about trafficking in this bill, we're talking about prostitution, is not going to reduce that rate. And also, as Michelle said, anti-prostitution laws disproportionately impact people of color. They impact youth that are houseless, engaging in survival sex work, people who are queer and trans, specifically trans women of color, who are often, even if they're not sex workers, racially profiled by law enforcement as being read as sex workers. These are my concerns, is that we're not going to reduce the rate of trafficking. We are going to incarcerate people that are just trying to survive. Thank you.
Thank you. Matilda?
Hi. I'm really glad to have the opportunity to talk with you today. I've been in the sex industry for 13 years in different aspects of it, and currently I have an outreach organization that works with street workers, primarily street workers of color, older women who have no other resources, who often do trade sex for housing or other goods and services because they have no money and they have no other options. I absolutely understand the intent behind this. I think that child sexual exploitation is a terrible thing, and I support the effort to end it. This is not what this does. In fact, the original bill does not actually attack child sexual exploitation or trafficking. It really just criminalizes sex workers. It makes them afraid to go to police. The language is not at all clear. I've heard Deputy DA J.R. Ujifusa talk about how he would never go after families or people who are supportive of sex workers, people who act as security, and then in the same breath say that he can arrest people for having condoms because condoms are proof of interstate commerce. There are many bad things about the current law, but there is no reason to make it worse by expanding it in such a way that it will affect disproportionately homeless people, homeless women, and very vulnerable people. It's been proven over and over that shelters, that food programs, all of these things empower people to seek services and to end sex work if sex work is not what they want to be in. Criminalizing them and criminalizing the people that help them is not the way to do that. In a similar way to domestic violence advocacy, we want to empower people to make their own choices. You empower people by supporting them, by helping them access services. You do not empower them by taking away their survival mechanisms. By criminalizing the very people who may, for mixed reasons, possibly exploitative, but be offering them key things to their survival, such as food, shelter, clothing. I urge you to table this bill and to think again about how you can actually help people. You know, there's a bill in the federal Senate that has been tabled. It's called RHIA, the Runaway and Homeless Youth Act, and it supports shelters. It supports shelters, food programs, day drop-in services for youth. That would be something that would actually help people. I understand it costs money, whereas this bill does not, but it would help people. It would cause a measurable impact in the rate of exploitation happening. So I urge you to take some time. We've heard some very impassioned rhetoric today, but think about what actually helps people. And not about further criminalization of our most vulnerable and marginalized groups. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me ask if there's any questions. I have a couple.
You want to go
ahead?
Okay.
So I guess I just want to kind of go back, and I'm going to go, I think, first with Michelle. Mm-hmm. You made a statement a couple of times that you didn't find that the bill is evidence-based proven. And I guess I'm kind of lost with that train, that thought. Mm-hmm. Because when I look at the bill and what the proponents have said, really what they're focusing on is where someone has criminal intent to force someone into prostitution or to participate in prostitution, that we want to ensure that whatever they may be receiving as the payment or remuneration for their conduct, that it would be prohibited. So I'm not sure what you, when you refer to not being evidence-based, what is it that in the sense of, in that context, because most of your for all three of you, most of your comments seem to be ensuring that an individual, and I'll use the term, who is involved in prostitution as a prostitute, mm-hmm. may have safety mechanisms, other needs to be able to trade services yeah. for sex work. I don't see this in this bill and what has been said, that this in itself is going to be criminalized or they're going to be put in a different, worse perspective than what they would be under current law as it pertains to prostitution. So please help me out, because it seems like a lot of the arguments I'm hearing mm-hmm. is not really geared to the focus of the bill. And so I want to make sure we're on the same page.
I'm sorry, is your question related to how it's going to impact the folks who are engaging in sex work? Is that your question?
No, it's not that. The bill itself says that if you are a pimp, yeah. this is you street terms, and you're engaged in forcing someone into sex acts, mm-hmm. you are not going to be able to get away with that in the sense of not be held criminally accountable if it didn't occur with you receiving U.S. currency mm-hmm. or something that has been identified as commerce. And in since the bill says that instead we're going to call out that if you're involved in this criminal activity, mm-hmm. forcing someone to be in the sex trade, and that you're receiving some type of remuneration, whatever that is, mm-hmm. that can be enough, and it doesn't have to have the district attorney mm-hmm. come in and say and prove that dollars were exchanged, but instead
right that it's
a new
exchange
car.
Of goods and services. Right.
So I'm trying to figure out why we're focused. It seems to me mm-hmm. we're talking about two different things.
Actually, we are talking about the same thing.
Yes, we are.
Because the research in New York, the study that I referred to earlier about the minors involved in the sex trades, only 10% of those minors were actually pimped. So if we are actually looking to target mm-hmm. pimps, this will not target those individuals.
Pimps okay,
trade cash.
Let me stop you here. Okay, so you got 10% out of the study. So mm-hmm. this bill would have an impact on those 10% that are being sex trafficked through a pimp.
If I may.
You may.
The definition of trafficking and of pimping is so broad that it can include people who are not actually pimps, who are not coercive or abusive at all. I understand that police say that it is not enforced in this way. However, people have no way of knowing that. And it often is enforced against people who are simply friends and family. We know that by research that has pointed out, especially if you're in a couple of color, you're a person of color with a black boyfriend, your boyfriend is disproportionately more likely to be framed as a pimp and thus arrested and incarcerated than a white man who actually is abusive and forcing his partner into sex work or his children. So without an actual firm evidence-based criterion on who is, what is abusive, what is exploitative, you have no way of ensuring that this is actually enforced against people who are exploitative.
Yeah, my other concern is that the language of the bill doesn't necessarily just talk about force. It's talking about anybody who is part of promoting prostitution with the exchange of goods and services. So what I'm hearing you talk about is the issue of force, which is actually not said in the bill, but you did say force.
I did say forcing into, yeah. but I mean, the reality, if someone is commanding you to do something that you may not care to do,
right.
and they're receiving some type of remuneration
yeah.
for that conduct, that's what I'm talking about. And whether it's sweet-talked mm-hmm. into doing it, mm-hmm. but the bottom line is they're being forced, and I'm assuming it's a, let me leave it there.
So I guess when I was discussing evidence, it's like, where is the data that's saying the number of sex workers who are actually being pimped? Has anybody done a broad-based survey in the Portland metro area?
What's the relevance of that as compared to, I mean, if you have individuals that are involved in the sex trade on their own without having being forced and compulsive into it, then there's a set of statutes that currently deal with prostitution. Now, I understand the perspective I think I hear is that maybe we as a country, we as a state should look at a different way of dealing with this type of conduct and how you can help pull people out or help themselves out of that scenario if they choose to. But if they choose to be part of that industry, mm-hmm. then that's, from what I'm hearing, is maybe their right as an informed individual who's an adult can make consensual decisions.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Understand that. But that, to me, is a different issue from what this bill's talking about. You're getting into the public policy of whether or not we should allow for consensual adults to engage mm-hmm. in this type of conduct as compared to having an individual forcing an individual to be part of that conduct.
I guess it depends on what you consider constructive and a good use of your time and energy. If you think that making something that is already illegal more illegal is a good use of your time and energy rather than actually spending effort and money on supporting people so that they can escape exploitative situations, then by all means, this is a great bill for you. But if you're invested in actually helping people, mm-hmm. helping them escape exploitative situations, then this is not a good bill. This is a waste of your time. And there are much better things that you could be doing with your time and your resources.
Okay. Thank you. Let's go first with Senator Thatcher and then back to Senator Gelser.
I guess I just wanted to make sure I understood where you're coming from.
Yeah.
In that what you're saying is this would, a person could be caught up in promoting prostitution if, as the prostitute, sex worker, mm-hmm. they receive something else of value. I mean, that's kind of how the bill reads.
Right.
So you're mm-hmm. saying that they themselves could be committing the crime of promoting prostitution as the prostitute, essentially.
No. So my concern with this bill is that basically we're just expanding the definition of prostitution to include goods and services. I hear that the focus is meant to be on those who are providing the goods and services. And the language that I'm hearing from people who are in support of this bill is that it's meant to be something to tackle the issue of trafficking. So we're bringing several concerns, one of which is that this is not going to reduce the rate of trafficking. My other concern as somebody who is providing social services is that I do know a lot of folks who are using survival sex work to get goods and services that they need. This bill would basically criminalize folks who might provide that for them, but doesn't do anything to provide the services. So I feel like the gist of what the three of us are trying to propose to you today is that this bill is not going to reduce the rate of trafficking. Social services would do a much better job of that. And as Matilda had pointed out, that does mean we have to put our time and our resources into something that probably is a lot more work than passing this bill, but actually would be a much better investment of our time and resources. I think we would see a bigger impact on reducing the rate of trafficking if we would focus on that. And my other concern is just that the bill does not specifically say anything about trying to focus on people who are forcing somebody into prostitution. That's not what this bill is saying. It's talking about generalizing promoting prostitution with the exchange of goods and services for sex work. So my other concern is that it's going to impact people that are not being forced.
And I guess I want a clarification, maybe, Mr. Chair, because it says basically that you're promoting prostitution or committing the crime of promoting prostitution if the person knowingly agrees to receive money, goods, property, services, or something else of value, but other than as a prostitute, being compensated for personally rendered prostitution. So I'm not seeing that as if a person provides it, I'm seeing that if they receive it in exchange for...
Providing someone that's going to
yeah.
do that. I mean, the prostitution statute seemed to me to be pretty clear as to the individual who is involved in the sex act receiving some type of fee or something back direct one-on-one. This, to me, when I look at 4082, is clarifying and expanding what is already law just to ensure
right.
that we don't get caught in a legal quagmire that says, well, what they received wasn't money. What they received were some type of goods or some other type of services, compensation, whatever it may be. And so it's broadening as to what type of benefit the person who's compelling or promoting the prostitution can be held accountable, and it's not caught up in a legal quagmire that because the term can be defined outside of the scope of what the statute currently provides.
I may, Senator Prezansky, I think that the other unintended consequence is you're trying to avoid one legal quagmire and we may end up forming another legal quagmire where I anticipate multiple lawsuits stopping this bill and wasting the state's time in defending this bill because it is so broad.
I appreciate that. We're going to go to questions from Senator Gelser, and I'll come back and respond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There have been a number of comments about what the language says, and I'd like to go back to what the language says. It does not talk about a person engaging in survival sex. This talks about, this really does talk about pimps. It's a person knowingly owns, controls, manages, supervises, or otherwise maintains a place of prostitution or a prostitution enterprise, or induces or causes a person to engage in prostitution or to remain in a place of prostitution. It goes on in sub C, as the chair mentioned, to exclude other than as a prostitute being compensated for personally rendered prostitution services. There is no other way to read this bill except for that
it is about
promoting prostitution. It's about pimps. Today, prostitution and compelling prostitution is illegal. I agree with the chair that this is a good bill because it clarifies the existing law. If there are to be conversations about decriminalizing prostitution, I think that's a conversation for another day. But especially for children, this is a very good use of our time. And I'm very grateful to the co-chairs of the Children's Sexual Exploitation Task Force for the work that they have done. They have not just tossed this together. They have spent a great deal of time working with others, and I take a little bit of exception to calling it a waste of time.
All right. So
unfortunately, there are actually systems in place which would be defined as pimping under this bill, which are actually ways that sex workers, you know, use to screen clients and to stay safe. I know of several people who could be arrested under this new bill if it were to pass, and all they do is run a screening site. They do take money for membership on the screening site, but this is a site that allows people to not die. So I think that there are better ways to do this. I think there are ways that are more supportive of children, and I think that it's very sad that you're not willing to throw money at these and would rather pass a bill that doesn't do anything but further criminalize people.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, I understand.
I'm going to have to start wrapping this up. I have another witness, so I'm going to give you an opportunity to make final statements.
Okay. Thank you.
But we're going to have to move forward.
Okay.
Okay.
First, Michelle?
All I can say is would be, I think that, again, unintended consequences, this bill is going to tie up a lot of the court's time involving us in, you know, actions that aren't really necessary at this moment, and it would be better off studying the situation and using evidence-based research to look at the problem and look and create legislation that is evidence-based, such that is recommended by the World Health Organization, UNAIDS, and other anti-trafficking societies as well.
Thank you.
The language of this bill does not just talk about pimps who are forcing people. The language also includes supervision, offering places to do prostitution. That does not necessarily mean force. It's not just about trafficking. Once again, I think if we are, and I will speak very honestly, I'm very interested in decriminalizing prostitution in the state of Oregon, and that's why I would oppose anything that expands the definition. And I am concerned about the unintended consequence of this bill. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
I've already heard police talk about how they specifically use loopholes in the law like this to target people, to bully them into confessing, to be traffickers. You know, I've heard cops talk about how they told a tattoo artist that he would be charged with trafficking for having tattooed a pimp who went in with his girlfriend to get a tattoo of her lips. This bill is easy to abuse. That's all. It's easy to abuse. It will be abused. It will be used to target people of color and transgender women. I'm sorry.
All right. Thank you very much for your time. Thank you for your statements. Joel, why don't you come up? We are on a limited amount of time, so if you could just summarize, knowing your positions.
Thank you, Chair Przanski, members of the committee. I will try to keep it brief. There was a lot to rebut
and
there.
And I would just tell you that I don't think you need to go into mode of rebuttal.
Okay.
Please don't do that.
Okay. Thank you. I want to just provide a little bit of context why this loophole.
Your name.
Oh, Joel Shapiro. Just for the record, this is an issue of sex trafficking that I've worked on for about the last 7 years, both at the federal level and at the state level for the last 3 years with the work group that Representative Tomei started and Representative Taylor and Representative Huffman now lead. And the reason why this loophole needs to be closed is that in the prostitution statute, it uses the word fee. And in case law in Oregon, fee covers any kind of exchange of anything of value. The promoting prostitution uses the word money. Money means only currency. And so that's why closing the loophole to other things of value, such as services and goods, is very important. In my written testimony, I noted a study done by Shared Hope International, which is evidence-based, which showed that in 16% of transactions in the study that they did, it was something other than money that was exchanged, goods and services. 2% of those, the goods were drugs. 14% it was something else. So there is evidence to support that. I would agree with the last panel of witnesses that we don't, in general, have great evidence about either the crime of sex trafficking or prostitution. But this bill only deals with trafficking because it requires a third party. If you exchange something like a place to sleep, that's prostitution. There's no third party involved. You are doing a direct exchange of a sexual service, a sexual contact for some other goods or service. That's covered currently under the fee language of the prostitution statute. Here you require a third party who benefits from the transaction. There was a survivor that I work with who had hoped to be here today. She couldn't be here. She told me last week that it was very common to exchange things like tattoo services, like cab rides, like other services that somebody might be induced to provide to a pimp to promote his prostitution activity in exchange for sex with the victim, some sort of sexual contact. She herself had that experience with a hotel room where they didn't have to pay cash. She provided a sexual contact to a hotel clerk. So this is very common. I think that the committee has grasped that, and I won't belabor it. I will say, in response to Senator Gelser's comment, that I do think that the points made bring up a much larger conversation about how we deal with legalization of prostitution, about how to protect the safety of sex workers, and that, yes, it's absolutely true that much more services are needed. This legislature in 2013, in a special session, provided funding for the first state shelter to address trafficking victims, which is operated by Morrison Child and Family Services, the SAGE shelter, which is now open. That's one shelter. That's not enough to provide services for everybody in the state in every circumstance. But Oregon is, frankly, ahead of most places in addressing this issue. It's going to take a lot more resources. This bill is not the vehicle to have that larger conversation. Hope that during the interim and during the 2017 session, we will discuss policy alternatives like the Nordic model, which requires a lot of provision of services and requires a change in some of the culpability. But at this point, I will wrap up and yield to questions and just say that I think this bill doesn't exactly what's intended.
All right. Thank you. Any questions? Joel, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. I'm going to just ask, because I had a whole number of people. I think I've checked everyone off, but is there anyone else here today who wanted to give testimony on House Bill 4082? Not seeing anyone. We're closing the public hearing. Understand we have all the paperwork, and the chair is going to go ahead and open up a work session on House Bill 4082.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4082 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 4082 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussions. All right, I just feel we've had some very interesting conversation today, and I think it's worth noting that I believe that the opponents to the bill have very sincere beliefs and desires to do what might be a more direct benefit to individuals who are caught up in the prostitution business as an individual. I personally see this bill, as it has been described, as closing some loopholes, clarifying and ensuring that those individuals who are actually promoting, and I include promoting, forcing individuals against their will to actually be involved in sex, and that we are going to close this loophole that will hold them accountable just as if they were receiving financial or U.S. currency money. I think it's important for us as a society, I think for our state, to continue to look at how we can better serve and provide for those individuals who unfortunately have been caught up in this conduct against their will. I also think there's some valid points as to whether we as a society should be looking at prostitution as it pertains to two individuals that are of age that fully and independently, consensually engage in that activity and maybe some type of fee or services there. That's not for today. That's not where we're at in this country. I understand a lot of European countries and other places, they've taken that step. Maybe someday we'll have that discussion, but today is a day to consider whether or not we believe House Bill 4082 will in fact ensure that individuals that are promoting prostitution, the third party is held accountable for that, even though they do not receive money directly, but receive some type of service or fee. Any other comments? Any other discussion? Any objection to the motion that's before us to pass House Bill 4082 to the floor with a due pass recommendation? Not seeing any. So ordered, and the bill's on its way to the floor. Looking at the carriers, I'm going to put Senator Gelser as a carrier, and I think we should extend to Senator Canope if he would like to also participate in that. And the chair will be more than glad to fill in on the legal aspects as necessary. Any other questions? All right, and tomorrow?
8:30.
All right, with that, that concludes our work for today, and we're adjourned. No. Two minutes to spare.
I thought it was 8:30.
I know.